It is absurd to believe that an agency which may tax without consent can be a property protector. Likewise, it is absurd to believe that an agency with legislative powers can preserve law and order. Welcome to Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone in the Libertarian Institute. Today I'm joined by Reed Coverdale of the Naturalist Capitalist podcast and Clint Russell of Liberty Lockdown. Reed, where is the best place for people to find your podcast?
Really, if you follow me on Twitter at Reed_Coverdale, you can keep up with everything I'm doing there. But make sure you go to the Linktree link in my profile and follow me everywhere because I'm known to disappear.
Clint Russell, where can people find you?
If you search in any podcatcher for Liberty Lockdown, I should pop up top of the search there. Twitter at Liberty Lock Pod. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Odyssey. I'm on all of the fringe sites trying to stay above water, but search Liberty Lockdown most places or Clint Russell. You should find me.
Links will be in the description below. Reed Coverdale, what is the most important thing libertarians can learn from the Make America Great Again movement and Donald Trump?
So I think what I learned from them is that it matters more how you speak to them than what you tell them. Because Trump just treated them like they were normal human beings and he treated them like he was one of them too, even though what he said didn't make sense all that often. And he often did not do what he said he was going to do. It was just the fact that he seemed like one of them and would talk to them on a level playing field. And then you also saw a lot of Trump supporters really like Tulsi Gabbard, and it was kind of the same thing. She just talked to them like she was one of them. And I found that really drew them in if you talk to them like they're humans. Another thing, do you want me to list all three things or how do you,
please,
how are you
doing this? Please, yeah.
Okay. So the other thing is I think you have to give them an enemy. I think that was very effective. And I think libertarians can do that. Especially now with inflation and everything, you know, instead of, you know, getting them to hate the Mexicans or whatever, like you could say, hey, this problem is really, you know, the Federal Reserve and our monetary system. And you've seen them turn on entities that they, I would say, used to adore, like intelligence agencies. You've seen them hate the FBI after what they did to Donald Trump. You know, that is a very effective thing that I think libertarians can also do. And another thing I would say is you need to convince them that you're not there to take anything away from them. I think that's what they fear the most, that you're there to, you know, take away their religion or take away their guns or their family or whatever. Like, and, you know, we're not there to take anything from them at all. We think that they should be allowed to have everything that is theirs and that it's their own property and no one else has a right to it at all. And I think that they actually believe that, you know, some of them believe that libertarians are there to kind of ruin their dynasty in a way. And that's not true at all. So if we can give them an enemy, if we can treat them like humans and we can convince them that we are not there to alter or destroy their way of life in any way, I think they'll accept us.
And Clint, what are some things that we libertarians can learn from the Make America Great Again movement?
Well, not surprisingly, there's a ton of overlap between what Reed and I had to say on this. But I think first and foremost is that we should learn that populism has a very fertile ground in America. If you can utilize the us against them, the elite against the everyman mantra, you're going to find huge support. Because I think first and foremost, it's because it's real. There is an elitist attitude from our rulers. People have identified it finally. The anger towards the media is extremely profound. The anger towards institutions across the board is profound. And any libertarian candidates that are trying to catch some tread, they better not ignore that. So that would be the first thing. Secondarily, I think that there is a tremendous need for leadership, and Donald Trump filled that void. He, as Reed said, he wasn't really equipped to follow through with what he promised. I'm not sure that he had the moral character necessary to do so, even if it was his intent. But people like to be led, and Dave's made this point recently as well, and I think it's a really profound one, is that, you know, they want to be led, and they know they've been misled, but they're not ready to lead themselves. So I think it's kind of important to realize from the libertarian perspective is that if all we do is tell them you can save yourself, a lot of these people are going to look at that as not much of an offer. You know, it's kind of disappointing. I wish it weren't that way, because I think most, you know, the three of us and most other libertarians feel like, no, just leave us alone and we can handle things on our own. A lot of these people want answers, you know, and the answer is going to come in the form of some strong man, political figure that steps on stage and calls all their enemies scumbags and offers them a path forward. So I think that that's another big message to take. And then lastly, I think that we should learn that many of the libertarian philosophies and principles are extraordinarily popular right now. Being anti-war, being more freedom-oriented, being smaller government, not focusing so much on the war on drugs or the war on terror, ending the lockdowns, like all of these things jive with us, and they largely jive with many, many MAGA supporters. So I think that there's a lot of reason for hope in that regard, is that we are not nearly as far apart from these people as it may have once been. So I hope that we can take some hope from that.
I think there definitely is a beneficial aspect to the us versus them. So you do want to have a side to stand on and a, you know, thing to hate or an entity to fight against, not just for the sake of it, but because there are bad people out there. So I think one of the great things that the libertarian philosophy brings to the table is a principled distinction between who the good guys and the bad guys are, meaning people who achieve their ends in life peacefully through negotiation and voluntary exchange, and then the real exploiters, who are people who try to live at the expense of everyone else, whether it's Pfizer trying to not please consumer demand voluntarily, but get the state to push private businesses and mandate federal agencies and give them free advertisements, because this way Pfizer doesn't even have to list the side effects, or Moderna or Johnson & Johnson. They don't even have to list the side effects now because the government's pimping their product more than they ever could. So because we have a principled position, it's not rich versus poor. There's plenty of good rich people. There's plenty of evil poor people. Black versus white, clearly evil. Men versus women, how are we going to have a freaking society? The men and the women can't even talk. But the exploiter and the exploited can be determined by who's achieving their ends peacefully, treating people as ends in and of themselves, rather than just a mere means to an end, as, well, this is the law. If you don't abide by it, then we get to cage you. That's the ultimate form of exploitation. So I love the populist message of us versus them. Clint, I know you moved to Florida. You were public about that. What's something we can learn from the success of Ron DeSantis?
Well, I think it just confirms what I was saying about how they want a strong leader. The fact that this guy stood up when it wasn't popular to do so, and he bucked the trend, showing courage in a moment of crisis to go against groupthink and kind of the mass formation that we've all experienced over the past 2 years. So I think that that is by far the reason that he is as popular as he is. Otherwise, he would be along the lines of a Greg Abbott, where he's a middle-of-the-road, milquetoast conservative that no one really gives a shit about. DeSantis is looked at as a hero, not just because he did the right thing, which is not locking his people down much beyond the first month of the pandemic, but most importantly, because he spoke out against it forcefully. You know, he said, I will defend my people from federal overreach. That is a very big vein of populist will in this country, is to have local state government defend what is now perceived to be the minority population's interests when it comes to leaving me alone. And that's why I'm here. You know, I fled California after 39 years and loved California with all my heart. And now I am a Floridian because I had to get away. I had to have some sort of political figure that would defend me in the face of what appears to be imminent desires for kind of totalitarian rule from the federal level.
And Reed, what can we learn from DeSantis and I know you've mentioned the Free State Project a number of times. What can we learn from those two entities?
Yeah, I agree with what Clint said that, you know, and in his previous statement that we wish people would take it upon themselves to be independent and, you know, take care of their own problems. But most people aren't going to do that. So you do need some sort of leader or some sort of strong culture. So there's not really a strong leader in New Hampshire with the Free State Project like there is with Ron DeSantis. But there's this liberty culture that's really pushed there. I mean, I'm from New Hampshire, was born and raised there. It says live free or die on all of our license plates. There is this very rugged individualist attitude that you are kind of born with and you need to, you know, keep to survive when it's 20 below zero in the winter. And that's why Clint will, you know, choose Florida over New Hampshire. But it's, you know, it's a place that cultivates liberty and liberty-minded thinking. And I think Clint covered Florida pretty well. You know, it's more of a state where you had a man cultivate that liberty-minded attitude, you know, against the federal government. It's not so much that Florida already had this anti-authoritarian attitude, but you have a leader who really has pushed the envelope and really just stood up to the federal government, and that has created an entire culture that cheers him on. So I think it's you know, it's got to go either way. You got to live in a place where people just naturally value liberty and care about it, or you got to have someone who's constantly, you know, banging the war drum and keeping everybody alert and, you know, pushing things in that direction with his own rhetoric.
Before we get into things that we think the MAGA movement needs to hear, why should they listen to us? After all, we very often lose and don't have a lot of power. Well, my general reason for why someone might want to listen to us is libertarians have been right about quite a few things. Ones that come to mind: foreign policy, the war in Iraq and Afghanistan after 20 years, trillions of dollars, thousands of civilian lives and soldier lives. I think the Taliban took it back over in 11 days. Iraq obviously became a breeding ground for Al-Qaeda after Saddam was removed, not to mention Libya and siding with Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria against Assad. There's no big threat from Iran, which Netanyahu has been terrifying us about since the early 90s. North Korea invading Guam. I remember that was a very big deal for all of 45 minutes. The drug war. If you watch Ron Paul on, Morton Downey Jr.'s show, they're all yelling at him saying, oh, you believe marijuana should be legal. You're an absolute moron. And after the Drug Enforcement Agency became so blatantly tyrannical, it became a tool for the cartels, which Milton Friedman warned about decades ago. Well, people are more slowly seeing that. Okay, we're probably right about the drug war, not to mention the welfare state. The war on poverty has not solved poverty. Government schools have not cured ignorance, to the surprise of no one, really, no libertarians. Other people might be a little surprised. Easy credit causing a recession in the housing market. That was really Ron Paul and the Austrians. And on Real Time with Bill Maher, people were laughing at him. COVID lockdowns, of course, people, like 2 days after they heard about the virus, they said, this is why libertarians are absolute idiots. And then like a year later, people are flocking the biggest government states in America, going to Texas, New Hampshire, Florida. Arizona has net migration because Ducey was very laid back when it came to any mandates or anything like that. The Patriot Act, people like Jesse Kelly say, oh my God, the Patriot Act was used against us because of January 6th. I was so wrong about this. I never thought that this would be used against us. The NSA, of course, lied about spying on all Americans. That creates a huge power differential. Libertarians were right about that. And the police state, which the right-wingers, along with the FBI, the CIA, they're really waking up to after the cops more or less sat back for the rioters, but made sure the St. Louis couples? The St. Louis couple who went out of their house, McCloskey. They went out with guns because this organization had been ransacking places all over the country. So, of course, you know, they jail Kyle Rittenhouse for something like 80 days. They get the McCloskeys. Someone drives through the BLM riot that's in the street. The cop pulls them over and arrests them. So it seems like we do have a pretty good track record. Of course, we're not as popular as we'd like to be. So my question is it just a random coincidence, or do you think there's something about the libertarian philosophy that makes it more prone to be correct about things, Reed?
Yeah, well, I think you listed just about everything I could think of that we've been correct about. But it is amazing to try to speak truth about a situation and then see both sides just call you a moron and call you the opposing side when what you're saying is actually consistent. I remember throughout Trump's presidency, my Republican friends would get all angry at me and think I was being inconsistent because they'd say, well, you love him one day and then you hate him the next day. Like, are you going to make up your mind? And that was because I was actually sticking to principles. So when he sat down with Kim Jong-un, I thought that was a good thing. And then when he airstriked Soleimani, I thought that was an absolutely horrible thing. And they couldn't put two and two together that I was actually being consistent in what I believed in and that I wasn't placing it behind an individual, but behind a philosophy. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're right because we have a philosophy. We have people that we look up to like Ron Paul or Harry Brown or Rothbard or Mises or whatever. But the philosophy transcends those individuals. It's not just, oh, because Ron Paul says something, it is true. Like Ron Paul had a philosophy that he stuck to. So did Harry Brown. So did all these people. So it gives us an actual compass to navigate through the political world where Democrats and Republicans, they really don't have this. I mean, I've often thought that being conservative does not mean anything. It's a comparison. Like I am conservative compared to the liberals and then also liberal. That doesn't mean anything either. I mean, if you are a conservative in 1980, you are liberal compared to someone in 1870. And then if you are a conservative today, you'll be a liberal. You'll be a conservative in 10 years and a conservative looking at you today will think you're a liberal then. So these are all just like comparing adjectives. You know, they're not describing a way of thought. It's all relative to what's happening in the political world where libertarianism is a constant. It would be the same 1,000 years ago today and 1,000 years from now. It's an actual philosophy of not aggressing against people, of only defending yourself and of self-ownership. And it transcends time. Like, I don't really see why it would ever go away in the way it's described now. So, yeah, I think that we do actually have something. It's not just that we're more interesting or more edgy or that we always lose. It's we actually have a philosophy that we care about. And that's why I think, you know, some people want to abandon parts of the philosophy, and I think they're wrong because I think the philosophy is the only thing that makes us special. You know, I do agree with Clint when he said that populism is a valuable tool. And I think Clint would agree with me that populism is only good if you are directing people toward something with principle. Like if populism by itself is, you know, a ship lost in an open sea, you got to have a dock to bring that ship to. And I think libertarianism is the ship to bring, is the dock to bring the ship to.
Beautifully said.
Excellent points. Two more things that I have to say that we're right about. The Affordable Care Act did not make healthcare more affordable. It decreased the number of insurance providers because there were more regulation, lowering the supply, increased the cost more than it otherwise would have been. Between 5 and 9 million people had their health insurance taken away as a causal result. And what Milton Friedman and Murray Rothbard always said were the two main pillars holding up the state were the intellectuals and big business, not, you know, this common lie. Big business wants no government so they can run amok. Big business is always using the state to stomp out their competition and get money through the violent sector instead of the voluntary one. So even though Ayn Rand had said, big business is America's most persecuted minority because they're always the villain, no matter what, Rothbard was still able to distinguish the voluntary sector the violent sector, people like Bert Volsom writing books, The Myth of the Robber Barons. He was even saying this years ago that big business is not inherently good or bad, but we still have this principle of voluntarism that we need to apply at every level. And what do we have today? We have the tech giants and we have big pharma teaming up with the state to commit just absolute totalitarianism in ways that should not be possible. And as far as intellectuals, we're right about this as well. If we look at critical race theory being taught in schools, that, well, we've hated everything the state has always taught in their schools, but now people are coming around to seeing it. I don't like this, what they're teaching. This is going a little far. Why can't I take my kids out? Well, then people like Kamala Harris will have me prosecuted for truancy law violations. I have to pay for this no matter what. I can't take my dollars elsewhere. So again, healthcare and education, we're also right about that. Clint, is it a coincidence libertarians are right about so many things, if I could say so humbly, or do you have a theory as to why this is?
No, I think Reed covered that pretty well, actually. I'm going to pivot and go in a different direction in terms of the libertarian message to MAGA. I think that it's important that the libertarians recognize what they were wrong about when it comes to what MAGA was right about. We have stood by and ignored or poo-pooed and dismissed a lot of their complaints when it came to the war on culture, when it came to the war on yes. white people, Christianity, all these other things that is kind of their big siren call. A lot of people just said, well, we're libertarians. We believe in dismantling the state, so we're not really going to listen to your complaints. And as long as the state exists, I think it's really important that the MAGA movement feel that they have been heard. And I have heard you. Like I hear what you're experiencing when it comes towards the media crafting this narrative of white men being evil or white people being evil. It was dismissed for too long, and it has now gotten root in a way that is very problematic. I mean, I use problematic, which is a woke terminology, but that's essentially what I'm talking about. Is like wokeism. You know, when Michael Savage said 20 plus years ago that progressivism is a mental disorder, I dismissed it and laughed about it, and I just thought it was like a catchphrase. But there are some hallmarks of it that have really infiltrated our culture in a way that libertarians have not paid attention to, and I think it's dangerous. I think it's dangerous that we stood by and just said live and let live, when a lot of these people don't want to let others live. You know, their ideas are wrong, and by their own they don't hold power, but when they have political might behind it, their ideas start to be really dangerous for people. So I guess I wanted to start by offering an olive branch to the MAGA movement and not just standing up here and saying we were right about everything and you were wrong. You guys weren't wrong on that. So I'll start there. Any other follow-ups that I should cover with that?
No, that's good. Totally excellent points. Read anything about Clint's points about the cultural aspects of the MAGA movement, which I agree they were absolutely right about, and libertarians did not appreciate the importance at the time?
Yeah, I think, you know, that he's right that a lot of those issues have become real. I think the reason some of them were ignored is because I know Clint didn't, but some of us grew up in the early 2000 hard right-wing evangelical crazy conservative movement, and so it's hard to take anything they've said seriously over the last 10 years or so. But even though I grew up in that absolute hellhole, I have come to realize that they were right about some of it. But I think that's why some people ignored it, just because the early 2000s culture was so ridiculous. And you know, when you I came out of it about 10 years ago or so. And so when you see people like, you know, worried about Satanism or radical Islamic extremism taking over the world, and that's what you're brought up with. And then they get upset when someone says happy holidays and they say, oh, this is, you know, they're coming to destroy our culture or whatever. It's hard to take them seriously at first, but it's pretty undeniable at this point that there is, you know, a united agenda to take a lot of what they do care away from them. And I think this speaks to our philosophy of trying not to control each other, because I think this left-wing, ridiculous, stupid backlash is a response to what I'm talking about that existed in the early 2000s, this attempt to control everybody It's a zero-sum game, you know. So if we could just live and let live, that's part of a cultural battle, is getting conservatives to realize, you know, a lot of this is actually happening to you because you did this to people 20 years ago. So if we can get everyone to, you know, kind of live their lives the way they want to and stop trying to take what other people hold dear, I think we'll be in a much better place.
Keith, could I hop in and add something here?
Please.
So I think that now that I've offered the olive branch, let me offer the lash. What you guys allowed to happen over the past 25 years when it came to the Patriot Act and the War on Terror has come home to roost, and you bear responsibility for that both morally and in your day-to-day life now. That lesson should be felt, and I'm not bringing this up to shame anybody, but merely to point out that when the libertarians were telling you, if you empower the state to label people terrorists and get rid of due process and all these other things, you are opening yourself up to that. And what we're seeing with the January 6th protesters is exactly what we warned you of. So I hope that, you know, instead of this looking like an I told you so, you take it to heart and you realize that, like, we didn't say this stuff for our health. We didn't say it to be high and mighty. We said it because we were right and because the fear was justified, and that if you empower a state to that level, you're going to be in serious danger in the not too distant future. If not for the War on Terror, if not for the Patriot Act, I do not believe that we would have a population that would have ever been willing to accept lockdowns. I think that they lead from one into the other, because prior to 2000, the entire concept of removing your shoes and all this other stuff, we weren't groomed to accept totalitarianism until about 01. And then that preceding 20 or the following 20 years really prepared us for this moment where the government could come to us and say, this is a crisis. We now once again have to do this really extraordinary thing where we limit your rights. I think that one leads into the other. And more than anything, the conservatives led the charge on giving the government extraordinary powers in times of crisis. And that happened after 9/11. That was a fucking huge mistake. So I hope you guys will take us seriously. And then my follow-up point would be, well, I understand we probably need the leader until we get to, you know, our anarchist ideal, utopic vision. I would encourage you guys to be extraordinarily critical of your leadership as it exists today. What Donald Trump did to you in terms of leaving you in the lurch for the January 6th supporters, or, you know, his supporters, protesters, rioters, whatever you want to call them, really shows to me his true character and his true colors. He was not in this for you guys as much as he was in it for himself. You felt differently. Perhaps you still feel differently. But I think if you look at his track record, it's fairly clear that his priority is himself, and it has been for as long as he's been in the political realm. So when you start to look for replacements for him, it's very important that you look for more than just a great orator and rather a man that actually shares your values, your principles, and will stand and fight for them and sacrifice himself for them. That's the real key here. Because if you continue to run the Mitch McConnells of the world and these scumbags that are as deep state as it gets, you're going to continue to lose your freedom. If you look at the presidencies of Trump into Biden, if you take the rhetoric away, it's hard to tell much of a difference. It just is. I mean, the lockdowns began under Trump. Operation Warp Speed and the vaccine push, all of that began under Trump. The suppression of treatment, of early treatment, began under Trump. It was all continued under Biden. And that should alarm you. That should alarm you that perhaps there are not political solutions to this. But if you're going to continue to believe that there are, you need to get real, true activist type people that are in positions of power to carry out your mandate. And your mandate is diminishing state power and getting your freedom back.
Reed, what can the MAGA movement learn from libertarians? What's the message that you would like to give to them? Let's do one at a time.
Sure. Well, I would agree with everything Clint just said. Kind of echoing back to what I said a few minutes ago, that this really is, you know, all this horrible stuff that's happening to you right now is kind of your fault. So, you know, learn from it and try to reflect on why it happened. And I mean, both culturally and politically, like if you are so intolerant of, you know, people who don't share the same religious views or who aren't afraid of the same things as you are, expect backlash and expect the moderates to be able to get caught up in a crazy culture war like they have. A lot of the sane people from 10 years ago are absolutely insane now. People that 10 years ago I thought were saying very sensible things about, you know, trying to live in an acceptable and a more like a more tolerant society of people who believe different things, they've gone off the rails. And I think that has a lot to do with how the conservatives were 20 years ago politically and culturally. So going forward, just remember that. I mean, it's I feel like coming up, there's going to be a lot of desire for revenge and for blood against people who have done things that you don't like. But, you know, I would emphasize trying to just take their power away instead. You know, build a fort around your state, nullify federal mandates, you know, try to really protect yourself. But if you go on the offense again, you just do nothing but try to crush the people that disagree with you. I think you're just continuing the cycle. So just look back over the last 20 years at what you did and try to look inward and see what mistakes you made and don't make them again going forward.
Clint, what does MAGA need to hear from libertarians?
Well, I honestly, I already covered it, or at least my 3 points, but I would say that, see if there's any additional. Well, first off, I think that there's a lot that we have in common. And I think that they should stop looking at us as this kind of quasi-elitist entity. I think that it's important that they understand that the people that represent us in D.C. when it comes to think tanks and like that are extremely disconnected from what we believe in. The Ron Paul revolution is alive and well, and it comes in the name of the Mises Caucus. So maybe give another look at the new movement that's happening in the Libertarian Party, because I know that many of them were very pro Ron Paul in 08 and 12, and then they felt as if they were abandoned over the past 8 years. So I would just encourage them, if they try and run a deep state operative type character on the GOP in 2024, it's vitally important you do not give that guy power. You have to make sure that, especially on this precipice of both economic and cultural collapse, and societal collapse most likely, that you give everything you got to someone who you actually believe in. No more compromise, no more milquetoast, no more like middle of the road Christian conservative type that talks out of one side of his mouth and then basically doesn't defend you in any meaningful way on the other side. It's not, we don't have time. I think that's the thing that I try to drive home to libertarian community, and I'll double down on it to the conservative community. If you guys value your culture and you value freedom at all, it's now. Like, it is not 10 years from now or 20 years from now. It is now. We have to rise up in unison. If you see a political ally and they carry a name of libertarian versus conservative, do not dismiss them based off of labels. We need each other right now. And I'll say the same thing to the left if we get into that. If you believe in bodily autonomy, if you believe in human liberty, if you believe in anything other than totalitarianism, you are my ally in this moment, and I'm going to act like it. So that would be my message across the board.
I love that one. Yeah, I think it's important that they are not afraid to take the unapologetic moral high ground. If you look at what is the primary argument the left uses with regard to one of their biggest issues and their biggest victories since, you know, my parents' generation is abortion, their argument is almost never, well, we ran the numbers and it looks like the benefits tend to outweigh the costs. Let's do more studies in the future. No. My body, my choice, conversation over. They have this unapologetic stick in the ground. Now, it's odd that they finally talk about my body, my choice when it actually involves another person inside of your body. Whatever. The point is that that's what's working. A lot of members of the Make America Great Again movement are Christians. So let's look at God's 8th commandment, thou shalt not steal. Not theft sometimes is morally justified after a Democratic vote. Thou shall not steal. Thou includes politicians and priests and family and whites and blacks and men and women and old and young. He makes this blanket statement. If you are a child of God and think you are made in God's creation, well, if you don't have the right to steal, you don't have the right to vote for George W. Bush or Dick Cheney or Bill Kristol to do it on your behalf. Look at how the left wins with healthcare. There, of course, is no good argument for, you know, the state monopolizing healthcare. But how are they getting more and more power in the healthcare market, from Medicare to Medicaid to the FDA to the CDC to ACA? Well, healthcare is a right. They say they take that moral high ground, and that's where they're standing. And they don't have it because they violate the thou shall not steal commandment by justifying the state, which literally lives as a parasite off the productive capacities of everyone else. It's just, as Rothbard said, the state is a gang writ large. The left will say racism is inherently bad, imperialism is inherently bad, sexism, slavery, Jim Crow, these are evil and not okay. So when I hear people making these blanket, principled, in appearance, principled statements versus the conservative, I think we should lower taxes and we need to find out what works and what doesn't work, and we need to have a serious conversation. That's so vague and it's so hard to get behind. It's a lot easier for the bumper sticker, slavery and racism are bad, that's my team. So if we say, thou shall not steal, so taxation and regulation are obviously illegitimate. Thou shall not murder. You know, the state doesn't have, Russia doesn't have the right to invade America any more than America has a right to invade Iran or anything like that. So by taking that moral high ground, which they already have, Lou Rockwell is a Christian, I believe. Please correct me if I'm wrong on that. He says, we don't oppose the state's wars because they will be counterproductive or overextend the state's forces. We oppose them because mass murder based on lies can never be morally acceptable. That unapologetic moral high ground we have, and it's in your history, MAGA conservatives, going back to biblical times. Thou shall not steal. Obviously, a lot of them don't think taxation's theft, but it clearly is. If I tried issuing taxes, it would be theft. If my neighbors did, if the Koch brothers did, if Naturalist Capitalist Podcast tried issuing taxes, it'd be theft. Obviously, it's theft, no matter who does it. So this moral high ground, I think, is vitally important. Reed, what is your next point in your message to make America great again?
About how we were right?
No, just about any message that you think they need to hear that about the importance of libertarianism.
Man, I think we've really covered it pretty well between me and Clint. But if you don't mind, I'd actually just, do you mind if I throw in what we could actually reach out to progressives with?
But Clint, anything more on Make America Great Again?
Yeah, let me just add that when it comes to speaking from the moral high ground, what that means is that you have the right to stand on your beliefs in a way that's very profound. And the cold, from my cold dead hands, 2A people are kind of who I'm talking to right now. Over the past 2 years, the argument for gun control died in this country. Do not let them talk to you about it. Do not let them talk to you about regulations. If there's anyone that runs on the GOP side that talks about anything other than getting rid of gun regulations and giving you as much capacity to defend yourself as humanly possible, do not give them a dollar. Do not give them a vote and laugh them off the fucking stage. That would be my first message to you guys, because that is everything that makes us different from Australia or Austria or any of these other countries that have had real totalitarianism, is that there is still a fear. I'm not saying that we've done anything to earn that fear other than being very well armed, but there is a fear that we will ultimately have reached a point, a tipping point, where we've had enough and we'll do something about it. And I think that that's very powerful. Do not let them take that away from you. And you need politicians that will stand on the stage and talk like Ron Paul did in 08 when it was unpopular to do so, and tell the fucking truth and talk about abolishing the IRS and auditing the Fed or abolishing the Fed. All of these things can be talked about in a way that was never politically possible. I remember in 08, the big debate was 38 versus 35% for the top income tax bracket. It was a joke. That is not where we're at. We need abolitionists. We need revolutionaries. And if you guys are going to be viable moving forward, I think it's very important that you claw back your liberty in a way that you guys were not capable of in my entire life. You accepted very, very weak messengers. You accepted weak messaging. You didn't demand much. You just wanted anybody that had an R in front of their name, please, for the love of God, I am begging you, do not accept garbage anymore. We cannot afford it. If you're going to continue to be a GOP supporter, just hold them to a higher level, please.
Reed, what is your message to progressives?
Yeah, so I think a lot of progressives who hated the pharmaceutical companies and who hated, the intolerance of the conservatives in the early 2000s and going back, and the people who were fighting against segregation and fighting against totalitarianism on a domestic scale, the Patriot Act and the government spying on people and getting involved in their personal lives. There are a lot of those people who still exist who have rejected the modern turn of the neoliberals. They absolutely hate it, and they're out there. Libertarians have always stood for those things that you guys value. We've been fighting for them forever. We're fighting for them today. And I would just challenge you to rethink the part of your philosophy that the state is a neutral actor, and that it's not just instantly used by the most evil people to enforce the worst ideas that they've ever had, that the state always ends up being used against innocent people and used by the very people that you hate. And I don't think there's been any more obvious illustration of that than the last year and a half. So to all of you who really care about opposing war, opposing totalitarianism in general, standing for civil liberties, and standing for personal choice and bodily autonomy, the modern neo-left has left you behind. And here we are. That's what I have to say.
Clint, message to progressives.
I feel like I would give the same speech to progressives today as Reed would probably like to give to the conservatives in the 2000s. If you do not course correct, you're going to create a backlash that is going to horrify you. If you continue to message in a way that is segregationist, that is demeaning towards people based off of melanin count, the same thing I would have said to conservatives or any racist person 60, 70, 80 years ago, I'm saying it to you now. It's vitally important that you stop with this divisive rhetoric, this basically all of the wokeism that you've been indoctrinated into is going to backfire in a way that's going to be horrifying. Ultimately, your enemies are very well-armed people. So I say this out of love. I think that you guys are misled, not necessarily bad people. And I think that many of you have your heart in the right place when it comes to wanting to be more inclusive and wanting to be accepting of other cultures and sexualities and all that. And I'm not saying that any of that is inherently bad. But the way that you're implementing it, the way you're going about it is very, shove it down your throat, just deal with it. I'm morally righteous, and therefore anyone that's my opponent is actually literally evil and not even worthy of life. Like, that type of mentality is so dangerous. It's so toxic. It's literally destroying this country, maybe this planet. Now I'll go into another olive branch after I offered the lash, because I felt that the progressives needed the lash before the olive branch. You guys were right and the libertarians were wrong when it came to ignoring corporate malfeasance and the alliance between the corporation and the state. Libertarians giving their whole speech and their spiel on it's a private business, it can do whatever it wants. They did so at their own peril, and now we are on the verge of losing capitalism as a productive, defendable position in this country. And I don't think that that's legitimate, but I think that it's a fair argument to be had now, because we have had basically liability-free companies have their R&D funded by the government with taxpayer money, advertised by the government with taxpayer money, and then injected into the human population by taxpayer money and protected by the government when it came to liability all the way across the board. This is the worst combination of big business and big government I could have ever imagined, and it happened way faster than I thought it was going to. So I want to offer an olive branch in that regard, that you guys were right, that we were wrong to ignore the potential dangers of big business. I'm not saying capitalism, I'm saying big business. And the only reason that I agree with you is because we have a government of such a magnitude with such enormous tax receipts that they're capable of doing truly evil shit when they get in bed with one another. So I think that that would be the two messages I'd give to progressives.
Yeah,
yeah, I just want to add. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Please.
Okay. The last thing I just want to say about the left is, you know, I get upset at conservatives because they're supposed to be better on certain things. They're supposed to be better on smaller government. They're supposed to be better on guns or whatever, and they're not. You guys are supposed to be better on science, and you're supposed to be better on acceptance and tolerance and all these things, and you're not. You're absolutely horrible on them. Like I was saying earlier, people 10 years ago that I used to respect, you've gone absolutely insane. You've ruined the idea of science. It doesn't exist anymore. It's become a religion, which so many of you hate. So, you know, cut it out with, you know, destroying everything that made you better than the right on certain subjects. You've just absolutely flushed it down the toilet. And anything that was good about you is disappearing. So please stop.
If you remember all the arguments pre-2012 or 2010, when gay marriage was recognized by the Supreme Court, they spoke as though they were all ANCAPs. They said, look, this is a consensual arrangement between adults. So you don't get to say, well, what, kids get to marry goats who then have sex with a relative? No. Here's the principle. Two adults engaging in a contract. That is what's morally justified. The fact that they're the same gender, or if they're different races, you might not like that, and you have the right to disassociate or not engage in that, but you don't have the right to have this moral double standard. And that is why I support decriminalizing all economic activity between consenting adults for that same principle. But what if there's exploitation? Well, what if there's exploitation in the dating community? Has any man ever exploited a woman or misled her to get intercourse? Has a woman ever misled a man? Therefore, we need a regulatory agency to issue licenses on who gets to date who for what amount of time, and they have to go in for state therapy to make sure their arrangement is legally justified.
Don't give them ideas, Keith.
It's equally as ridiculous. I should have stopped a little sooner.
Just make sure they're not 12 shots in.
No being 12 shots in at a homeless playground.
Exactly.
The ultimate, the checks and balances are vitally important. You need a populace that's relatively informed, but that's a pretty big ask. A better check and balance against people in power is the freedom to disassociate with them. If I don't want to work there, you don't get to conscript me. You try to conscript me, I get to defend you with force rooted in justice backed by moral courage. As far as chipping in, well, if I don't want to chip in for this thing you're doing, either make it better, so that's giving you an incentive, the oligarchs or whoever, to produce a better product or service. And that's the power you can actually take away from them if you recognize this freedom to disassociate, which only libertarians do. Everyone else, you have to have some vote among parties who are not only self-interested, but they're financially interested, and no one has an incentive to get informed, because even if it's $1 trillion, that's a small percentage of the budget. So that's yeah. Another one.
Can I make one, yes. One addition? I before we let the progressives off the hook, I got to give them one more lashing. I am stunned by you that you allowed forced vaccination to become a topic that is even politically discussed. I can't believe that you not only, I mean, the anti-vax movement began in the left. Like that was your ground. And now you guys are so far 180 from it. You have gone from no mandatory vaccination or no voluntary vaccination, many of you, to forcing it on every man, woman, and child on the planet. It's fucking lunacy. I am so disappointed in you. And if you are on the left and you feel me on this, why are you not speaking out? That is the biggest question I have for you, because I know there are many progressives that agree with me on this, that it is morally reprehensible to force a product, especially a product from big business, which you rail against, into every human being on earth. This should be the easiest argument in history. And you guys have left it on the table. You have completely ran away. And the reason you've done so is because you have become basically indoctrinated into this herd mentality, groupthink psychosis. And I beg you again to wake up from it, to speak with courage for those that are still thinking progressives, and to rise up against the groupthink, because this is not a trajectory that's sustainable. We will all pay a huge price, a catastrophic price, if we allow this precedent to be set. Please think one or two steps ahead. Even if you're a believer that COVID's extraordinarily dangerous and that everybody ought to be vaxxed, you should consider what comes next. And I really, really hope that you will.
It's like, imagine if you told Big Pharma ahead of time, everyone's going to take your product. What a disincentive for them to provide a good one. In fact, they were probably so confident that they didn't produce it well enough to the point where a year after there was this major rollout, finally free at last, we have more cases than ever before, and more deaths under the dementia patient than Trump. So look, and this is really what you get. So we can talk about the effects all we want, but if you say white supremacy is bad, it's really bad for one group to rule over another group, for this group to have rights that this organization or a group of people don't have. Well, government supremacy is historically far more deadly, and it's just as immoral. It is literally some people ruling over the lives of others. So if we are going to hate white supremacy, the arbitrary rule of some people over others, we also have to say Catholic Church supremacy should be rejected, Islamic supremacy, male supremacy, and also government supremacy, the idea that they're supreme. They have the right to initiate aggression against peaceful people. Everyone else has the obligation to obey. This is the root and why so many of these policies are so disastrous. So you can have something like, even if it's something good, like maybe a church or even a school, which in theory, I guess, could be good. If the government then starts to fund it, well, then the producers shift their attention from pleasing consumers to pleasing politicians. And this is now who I have to please. Screw the customer. That diminishes the quality. That's why universities have gone up in price, and they're talking about lesbian drag dance theory more often than they are, hey, there were two world wars. Why did those happen? I can ask all the PhDs, and they have the same fake that you peel one layer of the onion back, and they have no intellectual defense for. So this idea of government supremacy, the idea of statism, any anti-libertarian anarchist position is what's going to inevitably get you there, especially on the left, but on the right as well. Reed, any final thoughts on a message to progressives?
Yeah, just remember that everything that you think you hate about big business is it's a characteristic of the state. Like, you think that big business is there and, you know, forcing people into submission, not giving them any options, being an overlord over them and running their lives. That is literally everything that the government does. Everything you hate about a company that exploits its customers and doesn't give them good products and keeps them under their boot, that is all exactly what the government is. And in fact, every time that a company has been able to do that is because it hasn't had competition, and the government has given it complete immunity from any negative attitude from its customers, and they have to use its product because that's the only thing around. And the government is a monopoly. You guys hate monopolies. That's why you're so pro-union, because you want, the workers to have a chance against these big businesses. But that is exactly what the government is. It's a monopoly on violence, which you also hate. And it's also the power horse behind the wars that you hate, and behind all the horrible things that you listed earlier, Jim Crow laws, the war on drugs, the war on immigrants, any of those things. It's all from the government. So realize what the culprit is here. Realize that greed doesn't get you anywhere necessarily if you don't have men with guns enforcing the policies that you want in order to further your product without anyone being able to dissuade customers in a voluntary way. And go read Anatomy of the State, and maybe things have been crazy enough that progressives can get red-pilled by that. Who knows?
Or even if you are greedy, let's say, Bezos and Rockefeller and Carnegie, well, it's good that they can't get a penny out of our pocket in a free market unless they provide a product or service that we value. So yeah, if that's how we take this greed and harness it into a peaceful and productive activity for all parties involved. But yeah, things like greed, power, corruption, all of those definitely exist in a free market, but they apply tenfold to the state because you can't opt out of funding them and they don't face competition. So it's like the worst antidote. Clint, final thoughts on this and any ideas as far as solutions go for libertarians, progressives, conservatives, whoever?
Yeah, I think that Reed's point was a great one, and it's what I would have said to, you know, if I were to have Jimmy Dore on my show, I would ask Shoe on Head. It's the same question I ask any, you know, quote unquote, kind of red pilled progressive, is why is it that you support the state when you see that everything the state does is not what you want? I don't get it. Like, every time you guys make a demand, you don't get what you want, or you get an extremely watered down version paired with a mix of total tyranny and evil and war and destruction. And it's like, at some point, you guys have to see the light on this, that you cannot trust the state to implement your will. Even if you think that you're morally correct, they don't do it. So stop encouraging them too. So that would be my first thing. And then second, just let me double down on trying to get you guys to derail from this wokeism. It is going to create a backlash in your lifetime that you will not believe. The same way I was standing aside you in 2002-03 saying the war on terror is dangerous, not just to the foreigners we're about to go kill, but to the American people. And now we face that danger together today. Unfortunately, many of you support it being implemented against your fellow American, and I think that's egregious and evil, and I hope you'll reconsider that. But moreover, I want you to realize that if you continue with this woke narrative of white people being evil, it's going to come back and bite you. Many of you are white, which is even crazier, that you're trying to have people hate you because of something you can't change. It's as evil as it was 50 years ago. It's still that evil today. Just stop it. It's not morally justified. It's not righteous. It's not going to level the playing field. It's going to tilt it in the opposite direction in a way that makes a lot of innocent people die. And that's never a good thing, last I checked. So that would be my final messages to the progressives. And then as far as like how we move ahead together, I don't know. I think it's going to boil down to those that are still interested in rationality and science and all of these things that the left runs on but don't actually practice. Whether you be a conservative or a Democrat, if you see what we're talking about when it comes to science being derailed and towards the state becoming totalitarian, like, I don't care what your background is, like, you're with me in this moment. Like, we have to be able to counterbalance this. And if there aren't enough of you, then I think that breaking the country up is the only outcome that makes any sense, because at this point, I'm horrified to think what happens if we continue on this trajectory but try and keep a unified, you know, federal level government. It's just going to be disastrous. So I think that it's really important that all political stripes give serious consideration to what the libertarians are talking about when it comes towards increasing state power versus federal and allowing us to kind of go our separate ways. If ultimately you are dedicated towards your woke worldview and that you are going to see this to its end, I beg you to let us go, because I have no interest in existing in that culture, that society, that governmental system, none of it. And millions of people feel like me, and millions of people are not going to accept what you're trying to push on them. The same way the Christian conservatives tried to push their lifestyle on you 20, 30, 40 years ago. So that would be the message to you guys.
When it comes to solutions for libertarians, the things that come to mind are secession, agorism, and the LPMC, along with the GOP Mises Caucus with people like Tho Bishop. Reed, any thoughts on the LPMC, GOP Mises, secession, or agorism?
Yeah, I think, you know, locationally those things are, you know, better dependent on what your situation is. I am in the LPMC, and I'm also, somewhat of an agorist. I have not removed myself from all governmental systems. I have a commercial driver's license, so, I obviously still pay taxes, and I'm locked into the system that way. But throughout my entire adult life, I've never been in debt. I always try to buy everything with cash. I have gold and silver. I own a lot of guns. I own a lot of valuable assets that I could sell if things got tough. I think that it's important that every libertarian takes care of himself before he tries to help other people. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive, though. I feel like that's become an unnecessary argument that we have to be agorist or politically involved, or that we have to be personally successful and interesting, or we have to be part of a political movement. I don't buy that. I think we can be both. I try to be both. Clint is certainly both. Do whatever is most possible for you and your lifestyle and where you live. But personally, I would advocate, trying to use the Mises Caucus in the Libertarian Party for a reckonable force in the coming years. I think that it's hard to be a paleo libertarian and always speak the truth. That's just what I've seen. It's very rare. I think Ron Paul was an exception. He was a Republican, but he was really just a libertarian telling everyone the truth all the time. A lot of right-wing populists who want to push people toward libertarianism, they really water the message down and they end up kind of straying from what actually is libertarianism. So I would like to see the Libertarian Party actually become a true North Star for liberty. And, maybe we can actually win some elections, but in the elections we can't win, I would like to see us try to make the Republicans and Democrats better. You're seeing that happen in Georgia with Shane Hazel. He's even catching the attention of Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is telling Republicans that they need to listen to Shane Hazel. I don't really think Shane can actually win that election, but if he is getting the Republicans to actually listen to what he's saying, that's incredible. So I think that there's all sorts of different ways libertarians can, infect the public and try to spread the virus of libertarianism, faster than COVID to all the corners of the country. Let's try to do it.
Yeah, if we see the state as the monopoly on violence, trying to be the ultimate arbiter in disputes in your everyday life, one of the best hurdles to that would be creating competing allegiances, which would be anything from a book club to some exercise group, to a whiskey tasting club, to a movie club, even if it's a non-political organization. That's one more hurdle, which is why states are constantly bashing religion as irrational, as if statism isn't irrational, because that's another allegiance that people will have. So anytime you're going to church, anytime you're getting together with family, that is, in a way, secession, because you have a competing allegiance and you have competing standards that could create hurdles for the state to monopolize such authority. Clint, thoughts on the LPMC, GOP Mises, secession, or agorism?
Yeah, I obviously, not surprisingly, I agree with Reed on this. I think the only addition I would make to his points would be that it's really important that we stop tearing down people that see things almost exactly the same, but have a different passion, like the Tho Bishop area, where he really believes that we can convert and make the GOP the Ron Paul revolution anew. I don't agree, but I wish him well. Instead of going like, I don't agree and he's stupid and he's bad and all this stuff, like, no, I like him a lot. And I think that his heart is in the right place. And I think what he's trying to do is beautiful. And he deserves our support, our admiration. The same message I would give to Tho when it comes to Dave Smith and the Mises Caucus. Not everyone is going to see this problem the exact same way. And that's normal and that's fine. And it would be absurd if it were anything otherwise. So you're going to have people that are only passionate and willing to give their time, their money, their resources, their energy to the Libertarian Party. Like, that's just what it is. So trying to shame those people and make them feel bad about it is dumb. It's counterproductive. It works against your end goal, your stated end goal, if you want more liberty in our lifetime, which is what my goal is. I believe that people that can follow their passion to the fullest will create the greatest good. And if you're forcing them from the LP into the GOP or vice versa, it's a mistake. So that would be the big message that I would give on this topic, is that, like, if you see someone pulling in the same direction as you, help them. Do not try and take their ankles out from underneath them. And at the very least, just wish them well and hope that if they take a different path from you, it ends up benefiting you in the end.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're free market capitalists, so it would be strange if we don't believe in competition in this area
right.
and letting this product win. So, I mean, it is rather ironic when you see people trying to forcibly stop people from going a certain way. Hey, if your idea is better, you should be able to out-recruit us, and vice versa. If we're better than you, we should be able to out-recruit you, and may the best man win.
And for the record, if Tho Bishop gets, you know, Thomas Massey to be the GOP candidate or something like that, he may very well earn my vote. You know, like, it's not, yes. It's not outside the realm of possibility. But if Dave ends up being the LP candidate and he's polling at 10 or 12%, like, yeah, that is a revolutionary moment in this country that makes the LP a very legitimate threat for actually winning the presidency moving forward. Now, I'm not saying either of those things are likely, but either way, if it happens, you're going to have my vote. You're going to have my support, and I'm going to let this thing play out. I think it's far too early to tell what pathway will ultimately prevail, if any. So in the meantime, I'll be working on that agorist mentality, and I'll basically every tool in the tool belt. Like, it's when it comes to crisis, you cannot just rely on one thing. And I know the counter argument of, well, it's so dire, we all have to be on the same page. It ain't going to happen. You're not going to herd stray cats. Liberty minded people are not going to all, you know, pull the exact same direction. But if you see them headed in the same direction, just walk alongside.
I know. For God's sakes, the division of labor. Have you not heard this concept before? If you're a libertarian, please. I never would have thought that fiction novels would bring people over. But if you look at the number of people who Ayn Rand, who got interested in libertarianism because of The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, or Larkin Rose, David Friedman, and Anthony Davies, three brilliant libertarian anarchists who say that Robert Heinlein's, oh gosh, whatever his book, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
The Moon is a Harsh, that was one of my early ones.
See, I never would have thought of that. I then read the book and I go, how the hell did this change anyone's mind? The point is that things that seem so foreign to us actually work for some people. In the same way, me reading Hans Hoppe is like, read a page, set the book down, contemplate the existence of life. Like, it just slapped me so hard. And other people are like, God, that was trash. I couldn't get through five pages.
Right.
Or even me, at different points, years ago, I read Frederick Bastiat's The Law and said, yeah, that book is more or less meaningless. And then I read it again years later and go, oh my God, this was the most brilliant man of the 1800s. Because at sometimes you are not ready for something. So don't get all high and mighty about, well, what other people need to hear is, oh, shut up, you don't know. Just like you don't know, oh, everyone needs to get this injection at this amount and children 5 to 11. You don't know. You lie about knowing so you can feel comfy.
Right. Well, let me make one additional comment then, because it's so perfectly aligned with what I'm talking about in terms of the libertarians being high and mighty when it comes to the conservatives. Many of these people are your relatives, and they sound exactly like you did 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So yeah. if you're gonna come off like they are you know, they have no capacity for redemption because they don't exactly see, they're not fully red pilled. They don't exactly see what you see. I think it's absurd. None of us were where we're at now the moment we came out of the womb. Like, it takes time. This is an arc, and we are breaking an indoctrination process that took 18 years when it came to childhood and public schooling and things like that. And it's multi century long tread down this status mindset. And I am extremely hopeful, because when I talk to my conservative relatives today, they legitimately sound like me a decade ago. Like, they're not that far off. And I think that there's a real chance that, you know, a decade from now, they are as red-pilled as the three of us, and they're ready to actually make some revolutionary change. So maintain some hope, but also maintain some kindness, some humility. You know, like, don't just shove it down people's throat. And that goes for the left, too. If you have a progressive person that was like, oh, I was really afraid of COVID, I supported the lockdowns, I supported vaccine mandates when it was just one, now it's four, you know, all this stuff. Like, have some sympathy with when people come around, because we don't have enough numbers to be like, oh, you now see the world the way I do? Well, fuck you, dude. Why did it take you so long? Like, you know, have some compassion.
Exactly. Yeah, we got the two shot. I was an Obama supporter.
So we should be capitalizing on that.
Yeah.
So, Reed, final question for both of you gentlemen. You have a lot of videos. If someone goes to your channel and there's one video they should watch to get a better idea of what your podcast is about, what is one video they should watch? I will put it in the description below.
Wow. Man, the one video on my channel that everyone should watch, I would watch the latest Four Horsemen video I did with Michael Rivero. I forget what episode number it is, but I'll send it to you, Keith. That's my flagship show special. I do one every month with Ryan Dawson and Eric Jackman, and then we have a special guest. But upcoming is one with James Corbett, so that should be interesting. I'm basically bringing back everybody who's been banned off of the mainstream tech platforms and bringing them on the show and trying to introduce them to the newer people. But any of the Four Horsemen episodes are great, but specifically that one with Mike Rivero, I'll send it to you. It's quite a wild ride.
Clint, one video for people to get a good idea of what the podcast is about.
Yeah, very, very easy answer for me. My episode with James Lindsay and Josie is phenomenal. We do as deep a dive on the Great Reset, critical race theory. James is a real scholar when it comes to critical race theory. He's read like every paper over the past 30 years, 40 years to basically come to the conclusion that one, it's Marxism, and two, we have to fight it with every ounce of our being. And he is extrapolating that into the response to COVID in a way that's really eloquent and powerful. And myself and Josie had a lot of good commentary that was paired with his. So definitely I'll send you a link for that one as well. If it's already been seen like 20,000 times. So it's by far my biggest episode, and I don't blame people. It is the most profound by far.
Thanks to everyone for watching Keith Knight Don't Tread on Anyone in the Libertarian Institute, Reed Coverdale, and Clint Russell. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.